Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm just smiling.
Hi, Panda Girl.
I'm wearing a panda onesie.
Y'all can't see, but Chloe's wearing a panda onesie. And, you know, I'm just, like, wearing my nightshirt. It's it's pretty relaxed here.
Yeah, Mario's nightshirt is, like, blue and white striped pajamas, and he has, like, one of those sleeper caps. You know, it's like a beanie, like, but it has, like, a ball at the end.
Right, yeah, because I'm, like, a guy from the 1890s or something.
Scrooge.
That's what I was about to say. I do love...
What kind of name is Ebenezer? Whose idea was that?
I believe it's a biblical name. Oh. And I was going to say that I love the Muppet Christmas Carol. That's what that immediately reminds me of.
We know.
There goes Mr. Humbug. There goes Mr. Grit. Whatever it is. I love it. It's got so many good songs. The love we shared. The love we shared.
What is this? What are we doing?
We're doing a podcast.
What's it called?
It Mystery Murdery Thingy. Not Murdery Mystery Thingy. Mystery Murdery Thingy.
I feel like at first we said, like,
they were, like, essentially interchangeable.
Mystery deathy things or something.
Oh, like, at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chloe's kind of sick, so she's going to be coughing throughout, just so you know.
Sorry.
Don't apologize for being sick. Well, just getting over being sick, I guess.
Yeah.
This is the podcast. This is a podcast.
Mario calls it the pod.
The pod. This is the pod where we talk about...
What do we talk about? Oh, mysteries.
And murderies.
And thingies.
Yay. Good job. Good job.
I'm seriously excited. I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay. Episode 38. Woo!
It's a good number.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, I'm getting back to some more murdery things, you know.
What's a good amount of 38 of something?
What? I don't even know what... What does that mean?
Like...
What is there that comes in units, like, in...
Yeah, would you rather have 38 books or 38 cars?
I'd rather have 38 books, because 38 cars would get kind of unwieldy. I'm not fucking Jay Leno, you know? I don't need, like, a fleet of cars. Isn't there, like, a TV show of Jay Leno just, like, walking around Jay Leno's fucking...
Maybe there's an episode of Cribs.
Top Gear. Cribs.
Top Gear.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
That one.
Yeah.
That's We're watching Investigator, a British Crime Story.
Right.
Really, really good. Highly recommend.
Yep.
And they're mysteries.
Yeah.
I think.
What?
Yeah, they're mysteries. At least the first one was. Okay, we're moving on.
Yeah.
What do you... Are you going to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I already have a month up, so I'll just go first. So I'm doing, like, a pretty classic, like, serial killer. I'm doing the Axeman of New Orleans. Really, you know, gruesome, very murdery.
Oh.
The more axe murder. Yeah. It's,
why do people do this?
Yeah, that's a good question. We could talk about that for a while. This was a little bit before, you know, because this happened in 1918, so they weren't exactly thinking about that yet. A little bit, but, you know, they didn't have, like, the whole, you know, profiling and stuff like that. But anyway, so on May 22nd, 1918, someone went up to the, you know, back door of a house in New Orleans and chiseled out one of the panels on the back door.
Ooh.
Slipped in through this little opening that they created.
Spy shit. Like,
exactly.
CIA action movie crap.
And, right. And this is like part of the MO of the Axeman of New Orleans murders. Like, he always does this pretty much.
What if you do if you were sitting and then like a knife like just came through that wall and started like sawing?
Be pretty fucked up. Probably start fucking freaking out.
That's what the bat's for.
Right, exactly. That's you're like Jalen Rose. You got the bat. You got it ready, you know.
Should I add nails to it? Nah, it's a metal bat.
What are you in like the fucking what is that? Mad Max? Are you in Mad Max now?
No, it's The Walking Dead. And the person who wields it is the same actor that plays Sam and Dean's dad in Supernatural.
Oh, right. Boom, boom, boom. Exactly, yeah.
I think it's a wooden bat wrapped with barbed wire.
Good for him.
Which is pretty gruesome.
Yeah, good for him. Yeah. This does not, my story does not involve any bats with barbed wire wrapped around them. Sorry.
Do you think weapons could be mysterious?
There could be like a mysterious weapon, sure. I suppose so. So anyway, May 22nd, 1918, this guy, you know, slips in through this hole in the back door and comes up to Joseph and Catherine Maggio, who live there while they're sleeping, slits their throats with a straight razor, and then bashes their head in with an axe.
After death?
That's the question, right? I was going to say, maybe to try to hide evidence. That's what was one theory that I read. Or maybe just because he's a fucking maniac and he's, you know, like... With axe murders, it almost seems like overkill is the norm, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's sort of the whole point of doing
an axe murder. Of having an axe in the first place.
Yeah, you it's not the most subtle way to kill someone.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, not trying to make light of any of this, right? These are victims, but if you're just like thinking about this in from that criminological, you know, standpoint, like why did this person do this? What is this about from their perspective? Like what is going on here? Clearly this person like enjoyed doing this, right? Like they got some sort of satisfaction out of doing it. I think that's almost a necessary part of axe murder, that it's very personal. You're very connected to the act, you know, when you're doing it. As opposed to, like, poisoning someone or shooting someone.
Yeah.
So I would imagine this person is someone who, like, had some kind of, you know, was very, like, you know, obsessed with death or, like, I don't know. It's really into, like, the act of killing itself. So anyway.
Process killer. No.
Yeah, I guess, like a process killer. Yeah. So anyway, when the victims were found, Joseph was still clinging to life, and they were found by his two brothers, but he died soon after. Catherine was killed immediately. She was almost decapitated, actually.
My God.
Like, her head was basically almost completely separated from the shoulders, and in her head had also been hit, you know, by the axe, bashed in by the axe. And the killer had also left his bloody clothes behind and presumably, like, changed into clean ones before he left. So there was obviously, you know, some, like, forethought going into this, too.
Premeditation, yeah.
Definitely premeditation. These are all very, very, you know, calculated murders, you know, and just going in there for the purpose of murder. One thing that... again, as an MO of the Axemen in New Orleans, is that there's never any robbery. Like, they were not there to steal anything, even incidentally. So this was, like, purely about the killing. You know, again, clearly this person was, like, obsessed with, like, this thing of going in and killing people. And this is another part of the MO, the bloody razor that was used to kill Joseph and...
Catherine?
Catherine, is it? Yeah, Joseph and Catherine was found in the yard of a neighbor's lawn. So he had just, like, left the murder weapon there. And what they found, what the police actually found, was that the razor came from the barbershop of Joseph's brother, Andrew. right?
Oh.
So at first, police are like, oh, okay, now we know, okay, it's Andrew. So they arrest him, also because, you know,
just off of that?
Well, off of that, and also that he was the first one to find them. And he lived in the, like, apartment okay. next door, and they were kind of like, well, why didn't you hear something going on? You know, why didn't you go and try to stop it? What Andrew said was that he was really drunk because he had been at a party the night before because he was about to go into the Navy. So he came home and just, like, passed out, basically. But later on, he heard these, like, weird groaning noises from his brother's apartment next door. And then he went to investigate, and that's when they discovered, you know, Catherine dead and him, you know, Joseph just, like, clinging to life but dying soon afterwards. What kind of changed the police's mind was that, one, his under questioning, like, Andrew held up. Like, he didn't okay. contradict himself. He didn't break. You know, he had a good, you know, questioning from the police. And then he also claimed that there was, like, this guy who was, like, skulking around the building, you know, and presumably that was the guy that did it, I guess. So he had kind of a good alibi, I suppose, in the eyes of the police. So they released Andrew. He was not, like, a suspect anymore. But, you know, this one murder, an attempted murder, started this kind of, like, series of killings over the next, you know, year and a half. And in all, there were 4 people who were killed and many, many more who were, you know, severely wounded. And throughout, it's going to target, you know, the Axeman targeted mostly Italian grocers.
What?
Which, again, there's the natural question, right? Like, why? Why is it so, like, concentrated in this one, like, group of victims? Now, of course, we know that typically people attack or serial kill within their own ethnic group, right?
Right,
like, that's
right.
completely the norm. So I think it points, you know, we're going to talk about suspects later, but it kind of points to it being someone who was, you know, Italian, maybe who worked in the industry, who knew these people, perhaps. But the next attack happened in June of 1918, June 27th, 1918. Louis Bessemer and Harriet Lowe, who was, like, his mistress.
Mm.
Yeah.
Secret's out now.
So, right. I think they were, like, living openly together, but it wasn't, like, acknowledged that they weren't, like, married, which, like, came out later. So anyway, they were, again, sleeping when they were attacked by the Axeman. And they were actually living in the room behind the grocery that they ran. Again, that's, like, you know, a theme here,
yeah.
Italian grocers. And this time, actually, a hatchet was used. As is typical for the Axeman in New Orleans, the weapon came from the victim.
So what's it was the difference the between an axe and a hatchet? I don't remember. Is it one?
A hatchet is smaller.
Is you know. One, like, double-sided?
Well, the axe typically has a blunt end on the backside, like the non-blade side. Whereas the hatchet, yeah, it'll have, like, you know, a little, you know, spike or something on the other side, you know, to, like, grab the wood or whatever. But, you know, as is typical, that they got this item, like, the weapon from the home of the... Which, a lot of serial killers do.
Servant Girl Annihilator did that.
Right, the Servant Girl Annihilator did that as well. You know, whatever, 30 years, 40 years before this. So, Lewis was hit above the right temple, fracturing his skull, and the axe was actually left partly sticking out of his skull. Harriet had been hit above the left ear, and they both actually survived.
Wow.
An amazing number of these victims actually survive these, like, axe attacks to the head, which is fucking crazy.
Especially in the time period.
Right. And they were found by a delivery man who was coming, you know, to make his, like, morning delivery to their grocery store named John Zanka at 7 a.m. that next morning. And I think that was partly why they were, you know, they survived, was because they were found not too long after the attack occurred.
Right, right. So, yeah.
So after this happened, the police arrest this black man named Louis Ubicon, even though there was, like, no evidence actually tying him to the crime. Why they did this, I guess, was because he had recently worked at the grocery store, maybe been fired, but he was, like, eventually released. Nothing ever really came from that. So Harriet actually ended up dying August the 5th, so a few days afterwards or weeks afterwards or something. Her face had been, like, severely damaged.
Mm.
And they were doing a surgery to try to repair it, and she died as a consequence of, like, a botched surgery, basically.
Oh.
You know, so it was kind of linked to the crime, but not directly, you know, on that day or anything. But on that same day, actually, August 5th, 1918, is when the next attack occurred.
Oh, my God.
And this one's really bad. So, just, like, brace yourself. Anna Schneider, who at the time was 28 and 8 months pregnant,
oh, no.
was attacked. And her face was bashed in, the police think, probably by a lamp that was, you know, there in the room.
Huh. That's and her, different.
Yeah. But again, it's sort of the same in the sense that it's a weapon that was close at hand in the home, you know, so it wouldn't be traced back to him, right? And her skull was that, or her scalp, rather, was actually cut open as well. And she was discovered by her husband after he came home at midnight. You know, he had been staying, like, late at work. And she says that she has no memory of the attack.
She survived?
She survived. The baby survived, was totally healthy, was born 2 days after the attack.
Well.
And was born completely healthy.
Stress.
Yeah. Yeah, that probably helped to induce, yeah. And, you know, again, there was no theft from the home. So, James Gleason, this man who just basically, like, was really nervous about the police, I guess he'd been arrested before, just, like, ran from the police, and they thought he had might be connected, so they arrested him, but there was no evidence that linked him to the crime.
Mm.
So that, again, was another dead end. As we'll see, like, it's like a series of these dead ends for the investigation. And it, you know, never really came to anything. But at this point, the police are starting to see a pattern, right? They're linking these crimes together. Typically in these types of situations, the police don't want to link crimes too quickly because they don't want to, like, induce panic in the populace, right?
Right, right.
You know, there's some serial killer, the media inevitably comes up with a name for him or her. And then, you know, people just, like, start to panic.
Right.
But at this point, it was becoming pretty undeniable, right? Something was going on here. And 5 days later, on August 10th, 1918, the next attack occurred. Pauline and Mary Bruno discovered their Uncle Joseph Romano with his head bleeding profusely from two open cuts in their home after hearing, you know, some commotion. They, you know, heard something going on in the home and went to investigate. And the girls also saw the assailant running out, actually, and described him as, quote, a dark-skinned, heavy-set man who wore a dark suit and slouched hat. So, yeah, that's about as good of a description of the Axeman of New Orleans as we're going to get, basically.
Jeez.
Yeah. Very, very elusive, very mysterious. Joseph ended up dying 2 days later of his injuries, you know, just from the massive blood loss, basically. And, it, you know, again, before, like, modern transfusion and everything, right? The house was actually, like, trashed. It was, like, all messed up. But nothing was missing. So that was also strange. Like, why, you know, I don't know, maybe it's like some kind of escalation.
Is it like rage? Is it drugs? Is this one more personal?
Yeah, I don't know. But again, the bloody axe was found in the backyard and the signature panel was chiseled out of the back door.
Right, right.
You know, so it's a very clear MO. Yeah. Very, very clear MO, you know, with these actions. And this did, you know, as we were, like, hinting at before, spark paranoia throughout the city at this point. It was like, what the fuck is going on?
What city is this again?
New Orleans. Nolens.
Nolens.
Nolens. It's in Nolens.
Okay.
I was in New Orleans once. I was, like, a little baby. I do not remember
Aww.
It. Yeah. But I have also been to Lake Charles, which I'll mention later.
You okay.
Know, I had this family reunion there. It was great.
Okay.
Am I getting off on a tangent?
I think I've seen pictures.
We had a crawfish boil, and because I'm, like, half Cajun, and we had, like, a Zydeco band. It was really cool. I liked it. That was a long time ago. That was like 2002.
Anyway,
there was like a little kind of hiatus after this, right? But the next attack occurred on March 10th, 1919, so the next year. And this time, Charles Cormelia and his wife Rosie, and unfortunately their young daughter, who was only two at the time, Mary, were all attacked. The daughter Mary was killed instantly by a blow to the back of her head, probably by the blunt side of the axe. Charles, when they were found, was laid out bleeding on the floor, and Rosie had a serious head wound and was actually carrying the dead child, Mary, in her arms.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty fucking tragic. And Charles and Rosie did receive immediate medical attention, and with this one, they were actually found, like, almost right after the murders occur, or the attempted murders and the murder occurred, which helped, you know, them recover, obviously, because Charles was released, like, just 2 days later. And as with, and Rosie ended up regaining consciousness and actually said a bunch of, like, really weird stuff. Like, she blamed their neighbor, Yolando, and his son, Frank, for the attack. But it just, like, didn't make sense because, like, the dad was too old to do it. And
the son was,
like, really big. So there's no way he could have fit through, like, the panel that had been chiseled out. Like, we were talking about before, it's, like, small, just a little small opening. And her testimony was actually also contradicted by her husband, Charles, who was like, no, that's not what happened. But despite all that, the two men were arrested, tried, and convicted. And Frank was actually sentenced to death.
What?
By hanging. But a year later, Rosie actually admitted that she just made it all up. It was just all out of spite, I guess. Whatever the fuck that means. And they were released. So they they spent a year in jail. Like, Frank thought he was going to be fucking hanged for something he didn't do.
That's fucked up.
Just because this woman was like, oh yeah, I'll just make the... Yeah, I don't know. She said a bunch of weird shit after it. I don't know why. Apparently she was kind of crazy. And then on August 10th, 1919, the Axeman strikes again. And again, he came upon his victim, Steve Boca, while he was sleeping. Again, part of the MO. Steve had a large head wound, from the axe, but got medical care and survived.
Okay.
Okay, and then on September 3rd, 1919, the next attack occurred. Sarah Lauman was found by her neighbors with a severe head wound and, like, several of her teeth knocked out.
Oh, jeez.
And kind of unique amongst these attacks, the assailant actually went in through an open window. But again, the bloody axe was discovered on the front lawn. And Sarah also survived, but did not have any recollection of the attack. And then we come to what is probably the last attack that happened, connected to the Axeman of New Orleans. And that was on October 27th, 1919. Almost Halloween.
Yes.
And in that one, Mike Pepitone was struck in the head with an axe and was discovered by his wife
afterwards. Like, still going.
What do you mean? Yeah. It's like,
I mean, as of like
October 27th, 19. And maybe afterwards as well, as we'll get to. But this is like probably the last one. And Mike Pepitone's wife also saw the attacker fleeing the scene, but couldn't really, like, describe him. And there are some other ones that run, like, through 1921 that may also be the Axemen of New Orleans. There are also ones before this from, like, 1911 that might also be him. So it's kind of unclear.
That's scary.
Yeah, there's, like, kind of all of these axe murders or
And it's in New Orleans?
In New Orleans, in this town right next to New Orleans called, like, Gretna. And then the other ones that were later on were in other cities, like Lake Charles, and those, like, some other ones. So now we come to the suspects. So there's this kind of like legend that it was a man named Joseph Monfray who was killed in December 1921 in Los Angeles by the widow of Mike Pepitone. But apparently this also might just all be made up and like just a story. So
why do people do that?
I'm not sure. But what people also think is that this could have been linked to the mafia, right?
Okay.
Or it could have been linked to some kind of like racial hatred against Italians.
The grocers, yeah.
Right. As like the vast majority of the victims, like we've talked about, were either Italian immigrants or the very recent descendants of Italian immigrants.
Okay.
And this, you know, was a period in time when slavery had ended, right? It's like that next generation.
Right, right. After the Civil War.
Right, right. And Southern Italians, a lot of them emigrated to the United States to fill that role. So they worked on the cotton plants and or plantations and all that stuff. And apparently what they also did was like lived very, very frugally. This was like a theme, you know, throughout this community. Lived very, very frugally. Saved up their money and then used that money to buy businesses. And what some people think is that this may have been a consequence of like some kind of jealousy or, you know, like someone who didn't want the Italians to like succeed or put down roots in their community. So they're attacking them. You try to terrorize them perhaps, but it's not like totally clear. And there's this also this question at this time, like are Italian people, specifically Southern Italian people, like are they white or not white, which is again, you know, just like a ridiculous concept, but
yeah,
it was very important at the time.
Colorism,
right,
type thing.
Yeah, it's not like a real thing, but at this point in time and like in this place, it was like extremely important. Were you white or not white? So, you know, it very well may have been linked to like prejudice or, you know, like hate crimes, that kind of thing. And there's also a scholar named Richard Warner who believes that it might have been this man named Frank Doc Mumfrey who would use the alias Leon Joseph Monfray. And so I guess he looked into it. He thinks that's probably who it was.
Why?
There wasn't really that much info. Because
he's a scholar?
Yeah, he looked into it. His name's Richard Warner, so ask him, I guess. Yeah, my sources didn't have too much more than that on it. But, you know, again, we don't know. No one will probably ever know who the Axeman of New Orleans was. But certainly very very psychotic person, a very deranged, it seems, you know, person who would do all of these axe murders. There was also this letter, you know, as we'll, you know, see later on in history, right? There's like these, like with the Zodiac Killer and stuff and Son of Sam and actually a lot of these serial killers, it gets like really sensationalized in the press and then there's like these letters, right? And it's never clear whether they're real or not. Most of them are probably not. This one certainly is probably fake, but it's kind of like fun because it doesn't involve any death either. So this Axeman letter, it's like from hell. It's like the Axeman is like this like hellish like demon who's like writing to the mortals of Earth and tells them, I will take, you know, another life at this certain time on this certain date unless you're all playing jazz because I love jazz.
Oh, yeah.
So there was this particular night where, you know, it's shown up in popular culture.
Maybe it
times.
Was a Criminal Minds episode.
It could be. Yeah, the Axeman of New Orleans is very much been a kind of recurrent story in popular culture, especially over the last like few decades. I think it's like gotten more popular for some reason. So on that night, you know, everyone was playing jazz. No one got killed, so that's good. So yeah, that's my take on the Axeman of New Orleans.
New Orleans.
And my sources were, of course, Wikipedia.
Woot woot.
Yes. Also Seth Ferranti at Vice Miriam Davis at Smithsonian Magazine, and Amanda Sedlak-Hevener at Ranker. Yes, yes, yes.
Good job, Silva.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's my turn.
Yay, Chloe's turn. I like taking turns.
You're weird.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay. So... Oh my gosh.
What?
I just think it's funny that it says... I wasn't even looking... Never mind. I wrote, like, a script this time.
Yep.
So... Oh, frick, I already fucked it up. I'm talking about the disappearance of Amy Lynn Bradley. So... it starts, let's talk about March of 1998. There was a Royal Caribbean cruise liner called Rhapsody of the Seas, and it set sail straight out of Florida. So, after leaving Curaçao, the ship goes to St. Martin, and from St. Martin to St. Thomas. And St. Thomas is east of San Juan, which is just outside the Dominican Republic. Amy Lynn Bradley is 23. She's from Richmond, Virginia, and she got on one of these cruises. At this time, she had recently graduated college. She was just about to start her first job. And so they all went on vacation. Her mom, her father, Iva and Ron Bradley, along with her son, Brad Bradley. For real.
Brad Bradley?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's, accept it.
It's not great. It's okay.
Okay, so basically what happens, she went missing on March 24th, 1998. So a day after they, like, set sail. At approximately 6 a.m. that morning. And the last time she was seen was an hour before that at 5 a.m. sleeping on the balcony of the cabin that she shared with her family. So, according to the New York Times article, Brad and Amy had been dancing at the disco. According to the door, okay, so they all have, like, key cards, and the key cards records, like, the time when it's swiped and stuff.
Right.
So, according to that thingy, it said that Brad had returned at 3:35, and Amy had returned 5 minutes later. Brad said that he and his sister sat and chatted on the balcony a little bit before he went to bed, and then that was the last time he saw her. The dad, Ron Bradley, woke up the next day at 6 a.m. to find that she wasn't in the room, and she wasn't on the suite's balcony either. Her cigarettes and her lighter were missing, and the sliding glass door that led to the balcony was open. He went to go look for her, and then after about an hour of searching, he ran into the ship's security chief named Lou Costello. After telling him, Ron went back to wake his wife. And then while all of this was happening, the ship was docked 15 to 20 miles outside of Willemstad, Curaçao. So as news spread and more officials were alerted, eventually the Coast Guard was sent out to search, and the family had to wait for any news of her whereabouts. So there are some weird things about the search. There was not much action taken until about 8 a.m., and there was no announcement of her disappearance, which is weird, right?
Yeah.
Amy's mother talked to the ship's captain, Kjetil Kjerstad, and asked if they could distribute pictures of Amy to the other passengers and maybe have them posted in common areas so, like, people could keep an eye out for her and see it. But the captain said no. They didn't want to, quote, alarm the passengers or disturb anyone, which, I don't know, that seems like total bullshit.
Yeah.
But I guess when you're very money-minded, you know? Anyway.
Right.
There are some discrepancies in the reports and such. There was an internal report that said that her parents didn't alert anyone until 7:35 a.m., And at that time, the ship was docked and people were leaving to have fun on the shore. Some say the ship was searched room by room thoroughly and immediately. Also, other reports say that there were passengers who told Mrs. Bradley that their rooms weren't searched at all. So there's a lot of, like, conflict for some reason. That evening, the Bradleys left the ship to search for their daughter in the city, Curaçao. They say that there was a problem with the company lawyer and there was a lot of frustration with the officers. So it wasn't until 2 days after she was reported missing that an FBI team was sent out to search the ship and conduct an official investigation. There were also officials searching the shore. They were searching the surrounding areas. No body ever found at all. By then, the family was sure that she had been abducted by a crew member, right? Or someone else who had been on the ship. The family begged the crew to not dock to the next location until they found her daughter, but the request was denied.
That's crazy.
So I watched a Shane Dawson video. He put some sources on the bottom of the video, and it led me to a YouTube channel with the username We Miss Amy. It has like a mini 5-part series telling the story. So Shane says that Amy told her parents that crew members were always acting strange toward her. They were smiling at her in weird ways, and they were asking if she'd like to come ashore with them. Like, just, hey, like, come hang out with us. Another witness said that she had been hanging out with the bass player and that they went ashore, but only the bass player came back. Brad, her brother, reported that he talked to the bass player, and the bass player said to him, man, I'm so sorry to hear about your sister. I hope they find her. But this was the night before, and at that time, nobody knew that she was missing.
Right, I remember that from that documentary we watched about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But now that I think about that, her brother said he was with her on the balcony the morning that they got back. What does that mean?
That means that, I don't know, I guess he thought that she had been abducted already. That was, like, the plan, but it hadn't happened yet.
Right, right.
Presumably, I mean, that would be, like, the theory of the case.
Weeks later, her family hired private detectives to board the ship undercover. Still no evidence of her body. So, the weirdest part is that since she's gone missing, Caribbean islanders have reported sightings of her on the island. They also described specific tattoos that she had that no one would really, like, necessarily know about. Because of this, one of the theories of her disappearance is that she was sold into slavery, which I think is highly likely. Yeah. There was some serious cover-up going on in that ship, for real. Some human trafficking, like, type shit. The thought is that the crew members were, like, checking people out, like, being weird, identifying girls that they could take and sell.
Right.
Another theory is that she was killed and then thrown overboard, or if she was simply thrown overboard. It was possible that she could have made her way to one of the hundreds of islands, I guess, surrounding the area, because she was a trained lifeguard and an excellent swimmer. The thing is that this isn't rare. Women going missing on cruise ships. Hundreds of women go missing on cruise ships every year. So I also read a brief summaries of the disappearance of Marion Carver, who went missing in 2004 on the third day of her cruise, as well as Natalie Holloway, an 18-year-old who went missing on her cruise back in 2005. So these situations are also pretty tricky because you're here in international waters. So there isn't one law to follow or one procedure. There's lots of, you know, tricky lawyer stuff going on, I guess. And it's really unclear who was responsible for the investigation. And none of them are really looked into that deeply. That's probably why they happen so often.
Right, because the perpetrators know that they can get away with it, most probably.
Right. So then that brings up the topic of human trafficking, which, like, I don't know. You know how, like, people say, like, what's the most horrible thing a person can do? I think human trafficking is, like, on the scale.
Oh, yeah.
Like, out of, like, all crimes are awful, obviously. But the one that's, like, the most disgusting to me is human trafficking.
And there's so much of it going on in the world right now.
It's crazy.
I mean, there are literal, you know, like, old-time, like, slave trading going on in Libya. Like, if you are an immigrant or, you know, refugee, like, moving through Libya trying to get to Europe, you very well may get sold into slavery.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, I was hearing a specific, like, NPR story about it just the other day. This guy, he escaped because, like, you know, he got bought and then his, like, master or whatever, owner, like, brought him to town and he was talking with this other guy and the other guy was like, hey, like, I'll drive you away, like, right now. Like, if you want to get out of here, like, I'll take you. Like, let's go. And, you know, because he knew that he was, like, a, you know, a slave. And he was like, okay, yeah, let's go. And he just, like, drove him away. He ended up getting to Europe. And then once he got to Italy, he talked to his parents for the first time in a year.
Oh, my God.
His parents didn't know if he was alive, if he was dead. And he, yeah. But, of course, he had to leave his parents behind. I think he was from, like, Mali. And, yeah. You know, it was just like, yeah. They were, like, obviously happy to... And his dad, it was, like, really sad because on that phone call, his dad was like, yeah, I know, like, I'm glad you got there. Like, it's really sad. I wish we could see you, but, like, I'll see you again someday. But his dad died, like, before they could see each other again.
Aww.
Yeah. It's, like, yeah, very tragic. But, like you're saying, that it's, like, a worldwide problem in so many different, like, aspects of life. I mean, you don't necessarily think about that being tied to cruise ships, but
yeah that's why I found this story so interesting.
Yeah, it's more common than I would have thought it would be.
So I used Wikipedia, I used a New York Times article by Douglas France. There's currently a $220,000 reward for her safe return. It's quite possible she's still alive and just trapped. There was also a picture of her that, like, surfaced, and they think it's her, of a woman, like, laying on a bed. And it's, like, a very, like, provocative picture, and it looked like some, like, she was modeling for someone.
Yeah.
And they're, like, pretty sure it's her.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah, I'll post these on the gram.
It definitely looks like her.
Yeah, it really does, which is scary.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's...
Yeah, very mysterious. Very, very mysterious. Well, thanks so much for listening, you guys. This is,
Do you have weird shit in the news?
Yeah, I can talk about that one. The one that I was mentioning earlier. Okay, so I think I read like half
the
article.
Wait, we gotta do the thing.
Oh yeah, we're gonna do some weird shit in the news. Weird shit in the news.
Whoop. What?
Weird.
Cool. Routine.
Right. This is our one segment. Yay. So it's a story from CNN. Has China's most famous actress been disappeared by the Communist Party? So, obviously, things are very strange in China right now. I guess, from our perspective, they always have been. But especially in terms of, like, government control, right? So, this actress, let's see what her name is. She's, like, one of the most famous actresses in China. Her name is Fan Bingbing, and she was actually in, like, an X-Men movie, too.
Mm.
Yeah, there's, like, pictures of her with, like, Will Smith and, like, Hugh Jackman, and she's, like, a huge, awesome. Like, legit A-list star, but she has, like, just disappeared. Like, the last time that she was seen was on September 6th, when she was doing, like, some event, and, since early June. That was the last time she was seen in early June, and the I guess authorities have, like, arrested her or something for being, like, subversive. She, like,
what
speaks out against, you know, like, Chinese abuses, and she just doesn't, like, do the thing you're supposed to do, where you just support the government. you know, like, wholeheartedly, and, like, you know, you're supposed to be, like, in line, you know, the Communist Party. It's all about, like, it's not about the individual, right? It's about the collective. If you're not part of that collective, then you're against it, and therefore you're an enemy of the state, and therefore, you know, you deserve to be, like, re-educated or whatever. You know, I mean, we talked about, like, the re-education camps in, you know, in Xinjiang, whatever, with the Rohingya, right? I mean, it's like, going on all over the country. But also in September, there was, like, this report which was, like, really heavily promoted by the Chinese state, which ranked the country's stars by their level of social responsibility, right? Huh? Basically, what we're talking about, like, the how much they, like, suck up to the government, right? And Fan was ranked dead last at a score of 0 out of 100.
Whoa.
Yeah, so apparently she is not, yeah, socially responsible, according to the Chinese state. But, you know, again, that means, you know, basically, like, calling them out on their bullshit, which is, you know, dangerous, but necessary, I guess. And dangerous even if you're a huge A-list star, so pretty weird. And, yeah, we'll kind of see where that one goes, I guess. Did you have anything?
Yes.
Okay.
It's kind of ironic. So, the Inside Edition news crew van was broken into while they were reporting burglaries.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It says, Inside Edition news van broken into during report on San Francisco burglaries. So, oh my gosh. There's so many ads. What is all of this? What has happened to internet today? Can we fucking talk about all this bullshit? Ads everywhere. Ads in the middle of my 5-minute vlog or some shit. Oh my God. It drives me crazy. Anyway.
It's true. Internet ads are a bit out of control.
So it's a bait car, and the clip shows a couple breaking into the car, stealing a purse and a speaker that each contained GPS tracking devices. And then they aired the episode on Wednesday. So
interesting.
They put on a bait car. I thought it was random, and it was like their, like, news van, like, with the, like, cameras, right, and shit.
Right, right.
This, it has a misleading headline.
What? A misleading headline? A clickbaity article? The internet would never do that to
never.
Me.
Never.
Damn you, internet. You've betrayed me. You've broken my heart.
The other one I was going to do about was about a mariachi band.
Oh, I heard about that.
They're not a mariachi band.
Right.
They're just dressed up as mariachi.
Right.
Band members and killed 3 people.
Exactly. In, of course, Mexico.
Yes. And now, like, the problem is, if you're a mariachi band player, you don't want to go walk around.
Right.
Looking like you do. Now that there's, like, somebody out there that's so messed up.
I know. It's like with my story last week where the Russian troops were dressing up as Red Cross and crossing the border into Ukraine. You know, allegedly. It's like, how fucked up is that? Now, if you're a mariachi band member, you have to think in the back of your head, like, is someone going to think that I'm some kind of, like, armed guy and then attack me?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Just, like, because they don't want to take the chance or something?
Right.
Or, yeah, if I make the wrong move, is someone going to, like, think that I'm actually going to pull out a gun? It's very, very strange. Unfortunate.
Yep.
I do like mariachi music, though. It's good.
I know.
It's good stuff.
You grew up with it.
I did grow up with
it. That and something else. That's
Tejano.
The T.
Yeah, Tejano music. That. I don't like that, though. Tejano
you said
music.
Your dad likes it.
Yeah, he likes it. It's got a lot of, like, accordion, because it's, like, that German influence in Mexico.
Okay.
It's like, polka music, but, like, Hispanic polka music.
I guess.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't see the appeal of polka music. I'm sorry if you like it. I apologize, but it's not that great. Sorry.
So are we gonna end on that note? Polka music sucks.
So yeah, let's end this podcast on a high note.
No.
Go.
Why?
It's like a reference to like some Mel Brooks movie. What is that? I can't remember. Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles, maybe. There's something there.
Every time someone talks about Blazing Saddles, I think they're talking about horses. It's not about horses, right?
No, I mean it. There are horses in it because it's set in like the Old West, but it is not about horses per se. It's about a
Sounds like a horse movie.
It's about a
you know how that is. That's like a genre, isn't that weird?
Yeah, like Black Beauty or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like horses. I think they're smelly,
scary,
and they're kind of
they will ugly. Kill you.
Yeah, they're weird. I rode a horse once. I was a little kid, though. Have you ever ridden a horse?
Yes. I don't like it.
Yeah. I'd rather ride a bike.
I love my bike.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're just rambling.
True. We're ramblers. Thanks for sticking with us, whoever's actually listening at this point.
Yes, yeah, thank you so much.
You must be a very loyal listener. I appreciate it.
Thanks for supporting this, whatever this is.
Our little project, you know.
Our little project!
Thanks for supporting us and everything.
Let's call it the Manhattan Project.
That's already been taken.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. We could call it the Alan Parsons Project. Oh, wait, no, that's already also been taken.
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's a band, you know, prog rock and stuff.
What should we talk about next time? Next time on Mystery Murdery Thingy.
Oh, that's good. We can throw out some possibilities. Yeah, and if you want to suggest episodes, you definitely do that at, mysterymurderythingy@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That is mysterymurderythingy@gmail.com. Please email us.
All lowercase letters. Not that that matters.
I don't think it matters, no. You should probably alternate, like, uppercase, lowercase.
That would be a dick move.
Right? That's like some douche 12-year-old's AIM name.
My first screen name was CKS Softball.
Good for you. Good for you, because you did used to play softball.
Loved it.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's probably, I think we've bullshitted enough.
I think that's a podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.